Doddle do down, doddle them down, doddle them down, bow.
Hello, I am Flula Borg, and you are listening to a ticky-tocky, ticky-tocky, a boom time.
Boom time, boom time, boom time, boom time, boom.
Yeah, hello everyone, welcome to a very delicious episode of Boom Time into the new year, 2021. I'm here with the wonderful producer and co-host, Alex Simmons. How are you, Alex?
I'm very good, thank you.
Oh, great. Okay, cool. It looks like people cannot see you having a spatula in front of your microphone. Explain.
yeah, this is actually called a wind guard, I think. Probably nice. Not actually what it's called, but it's to avoid when I hit the p sounds, yeah. They don't go poof like you do in some microphones. But
that sounds, yeah, great.
That's very interesting for people who can't see this.
Let's just jump to the guest. Ladies and gentlemen, sitting here in, I think it looks like a hotel room, it's Connor Knighton. Hello, Connor.
Hello, how you doing?
Connor, let us know of your location. Can you tell us the GPSs?
Yes, Pasadena, California, in a room that would have overlooked the Rose Parade, if there was a Rose Parade. Instead, it's just traffic.
Just traffics, yeah. So I was very excited to watch the Rosie Bowlies. I like watching the floaties and everyone screaming and a lot of the batons. So I'm very sad that we all missed this. Alex, where are you, please? Location?
I'm in Highland Park in the city of Los Angeles. I think I'm equidistant between the two of you guys.
Oh, wonderful. We are an equilateral triangle. I'm asking because I plan to send both of you a Postmates, and so I'm just going to put as the address Highland Park and Pasadena and see who gets the biscuits.
You know what I just had for the first time? Hallen Ray's. Have you guys eaten that? This will be not fun for anybody who's not in Southern California hearing this, but it's a hot chicken place that is would normally be a like 3-hour wait in line that weirdly in the pandemic is easier to get because it's just Postmates only.
Is this based on the Game of Thrones character Howland Reed?
Yes, it's exactly that. Yeah, he just comes. It's basically that guy, actually. He just comes to your house and gives you chicken.
Yes, great. And then so the driver is Beric Dondarrion. Sorry, I'm just watching the show.
You're just watching it for the first time?
I've watched it now. I think this is number 6 of all the way through from all of... Yeah. Do you watch it, Connor?
Yeah, once.
mistake number one.
Have you read the books also?
There's books?
Oh, sorry. Spoiler alert.
Wow. Yeah. So it turns this show into books.
Yeah, after the fact. It's a novelization of the TV show.
Yeah, that's like I read Top Gun's a novel. It's very good.
I read The Last Action Hero. Do you remember that?
Oh, yes.
I read the book of that.
The book of that. You could not even describe it as a film. It's just that.
Connor, do you really think there's a Schwarzenegger film that Flula has not seen?
Of course, yeah. How I can't imagine that I envisioned that scenario in which that was a possible world. I'm sure he's seen them all. Although he sometimes pops up in other movies. It depends on how much of a completist you are for him. Do you feel like you've seen all of his appearances, even like little cameos and things, Expendables, all that kind of stuff?
Well, number one, I'm a little bit offending, Alex. You would assume I just know all of the Schwarzenegger films because he also has a strange accent. This is both rude and offensive. I don't assume that you have seen every single game that Damian Lillard has played for the Blazers because you live near to it, Idaho, Portland.
I have. I've seen every Blazers game that Lillard has ever played in.
To answer the question, I have only seen Eraser one time, and I remember he says, "You've been erased," and that's all I can remember.
Schwarzenegger's actually Austrian.
Yeah, that's the other reason, yeah. So
sorry to do that to you. There's another famous German who's actually Austrian, a lot of people don't realize.
Yeah. Udo Lindenberg.
Yeah. For those who don't know, Connor is our good friend who is a correspondent on CBS Sunday Morning, and recently wrote a book called Leave Only Footprints about his journey. I just went into real podcast host mode
I like you actually gave an introduction. I just started speaking about Postmates, not a sponsor.
But Connor wrote a book called Leave Only Footprints where he documents his, I would say, quixotic journey of trying to visit every single national park in one calendar year. Can you tell us a little bit about your book for those who haven't read it?
Started New Year's Day at Acadia National Park in Maine. It is where the sun first hits the contiguous U.S. There's a lot of debate about who gets the first sunrise, but as far as I can tell, if you're looking in the contiguous U.S., on January 1st, and this is a stat that changes throughout the year because the sun, you know, and the tilt of the earth changes all this, but the summit of Cadillac Mountain sees the first rays of sun, and so this year-long journey that I was doing in honor of the 100th anniversary of the U.S. National Park Service, I thought, well, I need every second I can get. So that 3-second head start after that, I was off and running. At the time, there were 59 national parks spread everywhere from American Samoa to the Virgin Islands. There's 8 in Alaska. There's 9 in California. So barely possible to do in a year. And it wasn't just that I would see all of them. For about a third of them, I was doing pieces for CBS Sunday Morning. So throughout that year, I was sending back footage to our headquarters in New York, kind of doing a version of what we're all doing now, which is working remotely. Beforehand, the way our show worked is everybody had an office, and I had convinced them that I could potentially stay out on the road this whole year. So in between the segments, I would stay out, see the other ones for fun. And yeah, had the most interesting scenic year of my life. It was fantastic. And finished New Year's Eve at Point Reyes National Seashore, not far from San Francisco, which is where the sun sets last in the U.S.
This is very poetic with the beginning and ending. I like this.
But this idea, and not to diss Europe, Flula, but was sort of a uniquely American idea in that a lot of the cool land in Europe had been taken by kings and queens. You know, it's Versailles. It's not public. And so in the U.S., this idea of like, oh, we should make these amazing places available for everyone was the idea of it. And there were some moments where like they would send big trees back from places like Yosemite or Sequoia to Europe. And they wouldn't believe that places like that even existed in the U.S. They're like, no, we've never, this is crazy. This is 3 times taller than any tree that we've got here. And so I think at that point, you know, Americans realize, yeah, we've got something special. Let's save it and let's keep it for everyone. So
I love that their way of proving what a great system they had for protecting the environment was cutting down 1,000-year-old trees and slicing them up and sending them to Europe. Yeah. Hey, check it out. We're protecting
like
our trees here.
Like you'd buy tickets to go. Well, I sort of described that in a confusing way where it was sort of the doing of that, which was solely for profit. That was not for conservation. It was just to brag really to Europe. But then when people saw that happening, they're like, you know what? Maybe the right thing to do isn't to like take these on a tree tour. Let's preserve them. So there were a variety of factors that all came together, everything from the writings of John Muir to just random citizens who, you know, Enos Mills was some guy in Estes Park, Colorado, who just loved the Rocky Mountains and thought that we should protect that. So it's hard to give credit to any one person for doing it. But the act that created the Park Service, which is when there was already a handful of parks, that was Woodrow Wilson. And so that was 100 years ago. From 2016, which is when I did this.
Because truly, I thought Teddy Roosevelt created the first national park. Is this incorrect?
Yeah, it is incorrect, yeah.
Me.
Yeah, sorry. he was instrumental in the creation of them. I think pre-Obama had protected more acres of the U.S. a lot through the Antiquities Act, if I remember correctly. So like a lot of national monuments. Obama gets credit for having protected more, but a lot of that's a marine monument. So Roosevelt is who people associate with this. I don't think we would have the park system we have today without him, but it wasn't like it was him thinking like, all right, this is what we do. Let's protect all of this. It wasn't his original idea.
Got it. And wait, very quick question. Alex, several minutes ago, you mentioned something about exotics. Can you explain? You said it was an exotic trip. So I didn't know. Was this
week? Did he say quixotic, maybe?
Quixotic.
I thought you had a slight seizure before saying exotic. What is quixotic?
It's so funny because we've had the same conversation on this podcast before.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, this tells you how spaced away each episode is. I probably asked you this 5 years ago.
Don Quixote, famous Spanish. Quixote. Yeah, quixotic literature. Where he goes on a quest that is doomed from the start. Quixotic.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
Because, you know, what Connor set out to do was nearly impossible. And what's crazy about your trip is that I think because you had to do it for CBS and you had to, you couldn't just say, hey, CBS, I'm going to do only Northwest parks for the next 6 weeks. They had to kind of dictate which parks you did first in a sense. So what that meant is that you had to go from like Maine to Florida, back to New England, then to Texas. And then you were like zigzagging the whole country. So it was even more difficult than just if you were strictly worried about hitting every park, right?
Yeah, there was a point sometime through that centennial year where I think the Wall Street Journal or someone had published a map of like, this is the most efficient way to go through all the national parks. I believe you sent me that map. A lot of friends did because that article saw it. And they're like, oh, this is what you're doing, right? And I'm like, that wasn't even close to what I was doing because I was chasing stories. So one example would be the Devil's Hole pupfish, which is one of the rarest fish in the world, lives in what basically looks like a pond in Death Valley. There's one day a year that they count those fish, and I wanted to be there on counting day. Otherwise, that would have not been the time of year I went to that park. And then we interviewed the Secretary of Interior at Mount Rainier. She was available for one day there. A week and a half later, there was a story in the Great Smoky Mountains where families are able to go visit their ancestral homes up in the mountains, these old abandoned cemeteries. I scooted all the way back across the country to cover that. So it was probably 2 to 3 times the amount of travel that you would need to do if you were just going on fun hikes. But that was what made it challenging. And I think it was having done that where having only done a third of the parks for the show, I was like, oh, well, I could have done stories in those other two. Maybe write a book about it. So, Fuli, I'm curious, as in your park travels, I know you've gone to some of them. I've seen pictures of you at Joshua Tree and stuff like that. But like, what do you make of this? Was it something that you heard about growing up? Or you're like, oh, I feel like the Grand Canyon is world famous. Some of these other spots, were those even on your radar?
Grand Canyon was very popular. I can remember I was going as a high school person, and I knew who was German and who was not because everyone with Birkenstocks and socks. I knew these were definitely my fellow compatriots. Yes, and we know Yosemite, which is, we would say Yosemite, which is incorrect, but we know of this one. Really, everything with cowboys we know, but I think me and also many Americans don't know that there's like national parks that's like, isn't there some that's just like, oh, it's a building, it's like a building with a fountain. It's like, oh, that's a national park.
Yeah, Hot Springs National Park in Arkansas is a bunch of buildings with a bunch of fountains, but yeah, it's just like a bath park, basically, where you take baths.
Oh, and it's, why is this a national park? This sounds like a swimming pool.
I mean, you're not far off. There was a time where they believed that that water would cure everything from like syphilis to rheumatism or whatever, and so they protected that as the people's water, where people could come and from all over the country. I mean, at some point they realized that there were better treatments for syphilis than a bath, but there was a time where like that was the top of medical knowledge. And yeah, they'd have folks go there. The story I wanted to do and ended up not doing was on Germans specifically and some Italians who go to Death Valley National Park in the summer for heat tourism reasons. I just thought that's so interesting that like there's no place in Europe that gets that hot. So it's like a fun thing to go and take a picture of 125 degrees Fahrenheit and like, I don't know, tell your friends back in Munich about it or whatever.
Oh, yes. No, I have photos of me as 18 years old in the Badwater Basin, which was to go, you know, very low in there. And this was in June. So it was very, very hot. And yes, we don't understand this. It's like almost the same as going to like Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas. Like, we don't have this in Germany at all. There's nothing close to this insanity. So this is the same with these extreme heats. So yeah, that's of course a very German thing. Let's see how terrible it is. Oh, it's like if you know this Saturday Night Live skit of everyone is drinking the terrible milk. It's like, oh, this tastes very terrible. Please put it in your mouth. Oh, I agree. Yeah. It's also very nasty. Let me try, Daddy. It's kind of like that.
That is exactly like that. Yes.
Yeah.
The first time I went to Joshua Tree National Park, I remember, he was saying how busy the park ranger I spoke to said, you know, it actually, the camping really fills up in the fall and the spring. It's like the best time of year. And then he said, of course, it's wide open in the summer. It's just unbearable, except for the German families.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. They love it. And I mean, part of that's just like, you know, you school's out in the summer, if you're going to take a long, you know, American vacation, that's when you take it no matter what. So it's a part of that. It's just a function of like the calendar. But I think, yeah, a bit of it is that let's experience this horrendous heat.
Well, we love saunas, you know, so many, it's very much in the culture. Let's go to extreme heats and sit there and then pour hot water every place and squirt some steam. So
what's the German Grand Canyon? Is there some spot that's like the, you know, bucket list, see this before you die? Is it a mountain or what's the spot?
If you're asking me, I would say it's my mom's Linzertorte.
Yeah, I've heard about that. Yeah. Actually, just your mom in general, I think, has come up on a lot of lists. Yeah.
Yes. We don't have it like this, you know, but we have very pretty places, beautiful places, but they're not like Nash. Like, I like the Part nach Klamm, which is a gorge, as you would call it, which sounds sexual. It's not. And it is just carved with water for many years. And it is in Garmisch, the Part nach Klamm. And so it's very pretty to walk around this. But we are just a small country. Like, how many Germanys fit inside Texas? It's like the, you know, how many Earths fit on that one wart on the side of Jupiter's face, you know? There's like 85 Germanys in one Texas. So we do not have a Grand Canyon because we are not large enough for it.
Alex, you get out there a bunch, right? Do you have a favorite one that you've been to?
I'm a huge, huge fan of Glacier National Park. I just think the lakes up there, actually Flula and I have been there together. Some of the hikes up there and the glaciers and those lakes are just, I don't know, I haven't seen anything else like that. And yet at the same time, it's accessible. You can't, like, I'm sure there are places in Alaska that you've been to that are equally majestic, but the fact that you can get to Glacier and you can drive in and see all that stuff. I'm a huge Montana fan. So yeah, that's my favorite. I also am a big fan of Olympic National Park. I just think in a different way, those rainforests are just sort of otherworldly. Like, there really aren't places like that. They're so unique. You see like different types of trees, and yeah, so those are my two favorite.
I'm hot on Olympic, especially right now. I revisited it this summer. So hot. So hot.
Oh, I like it. Tell me more, Connor.
And because it's got a little bit of everything. Like, what's been nice is because I was moving through so many of them at such a quick clip, spots like Glacier that are, you know, I think Glacier's 1 million acres. I saw such a small fraction of it, had a lovely time, but there's a lot more there to explore. And that's true for most of them, but Olympic I went back to this summer, and like, it's, you can kind of give a unqualified recommendation for that. Joshua Tree is very specific. I could see someone not liking Joshua Tree, but like Olympic, it's got a beach if you want it, it's got the rainforest if you want it, it's got the mountains that look like the Alps if you want it, and so
it's got twilight filming locations.
It's got that. I mean, yeah, really, that's how I just want to see where Edward and Bella but yeah, Forks Washington is right at the base of that, which I think is the Twilight Town, right?
I don't know. The last time I went to Olympic National Park, I just felt like half of the signage and the guidebooks were like, you know, this is amazing hike. The other half were like, this is where Bella walked in front of this tree where like a lot of like teenagers stop and take selfies.
Because if I remember that right, I think it's that the author of that series had never even been out there before, but she went to like an atlas or an almanac or something. And was like, where does it rain the most? Or where is it cloudiest? Like, where could vampires potentially live?
Yeah.
Oh, and that's my search term when I look for Zillow houses.
Three bedrooms, two bathrooms.
Possible vampire home. Yes. Wait, Connor, so how many parks? And by the way, I know you are not an expert. We are just asking you because we know a little less than you. So apology for this. But how many parks are there now?
So what gets a little confusing is that the National Park Service, which manages all sorts of things, including places like Gettysburg, places like, you know, Ben Franklin's bathroom or something in Philadelphia. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff.
I'm hot on that, let me tell you, Connor.
Santa Monica Mountains. I mean, so that number is changing all the time and is probably in like the 420s to almost 430 right now. But the actual national parks, which are created by an act of Congress, that's the difference. A president can designate a national monument. There's all sorts of ways that national seashores and rivers can happen. But Congress has to get involved to make a national park. The year I did it, there were 59. There have recently been four more added, including one in my home state of West Virginia that was just added like 2 weeks ago. But in those four cases, those are just rebrandings. So it's, you could argue that maybe that didn't even make sense. I mean, they were already protected. It's just changing the name. Whereas, you know, to protect Crater Lake as a national park, that was a big deal. That was saying, okay, let's take this land off the market. Let's make it for everybody. To change Indiana Dunes National Lakeshore to Indiana Dunes National Park, which happened a couple of years ago, is more just a branding thing. But yeah, so 63 is the answer right now. There's 63, which in most cases are kind of like the best of the best. Not always. I mean, there's some where you're like, oh, how did that sneak in there? Because it's not like there's some panel that reviews them every year and decides that, like, okay, this one is better or worse than the other. But as a general rule, the parks are like the marquee kinds of locations you'd plan a trip around, like a Yosemite, like a Grand Canyon.
Okay, so then my question to you is there like a very underrated, like the Dominique Wilkins of national parks?
Part of what convinced me to do the year was when I looked down that list, I realized how many I'd never heard of. I mean, for every Grand Canyon, there's a Kobuk Valley. There's a, even Great Sand Dunes in Colorado. That's one that I'd never heard of before. It's the quietest place in the country. We should record that podcast or this podcast there because yeah. It is the sand is quieter than any recording studio you've ever been in. It deadens the sound and looks sort of like the Sahara Desert's been stuck into the Rocky Mountains. So that spot's neat. I thought, I mean, they're all interesting. So Cuyahoga Valley in Ohio, it's not the most scenic spot. It's fine. If you live in Cleveland, it's a good place to go take a hike. I don't know if I'd plan a family trip around it, but there's tons of fascinating stories there. So it depends on what you're looking at when it comes to underrated. But for scenery, I mean, there's fantastic ones in Alaska. They're hard to get to. So that's maybe why you haven't heard of them so much, is that it's more of a production. For me, Channel Islands, which is the closest to all of us right now. You know, if we were to like just draw a straight line from where we're all sitting, I think Channel Islands is probably the closest. And that's one that after a decade of living in LA, I'd never been to because you have to take a boat. And that just seemed stupidly insurmountable, even though it's like $50 in an hour or something. But those were really great. It took a year of going to all of them to go to the one that had been closest to my house for all that time. So
I've never heard of this one. Is it near the what's that one island? It's like hippie time. Everyone go hippie. And it's like you can see it from Santa Monica Pier. It's like, oh, hippie time, look at this.
I think you're talking about Catalina Island.
Catalina, yeah.
Although I've never associated that.
Yeah, yeah.
I've never been.
Catalina is one of the Channel Islands, and it's like the inhabited one. So the other seven or eight or whatever they are, those are part of the park. All the same chain. Catalina, what I associate with it is like saltwater taffy, kind of like very much not hippie, beachy sandal shops. And like, there's a pier. I mean, it's nice, but it's not like, it's not the Marfa of like islands or anything.
There's so a kind of touristy,
more
touristy.
Avalon. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me rephrase the question. Hey, so what's the name of that island? It's like taffy time.
Yeah. Catalina. That's Catalina. Yeah.
Okay. Got it. Thanks guys. Cool.
Connor, which national park is the most overrated in that case?
Ooh, good Ouch. Question. Overrated's tough to judge. I mean, I can't believe I'm saying something like this, but like the Grand Canyon, as amazing as it is, I mean, it is worth seeing, but there's not a ton to do at the Grand Canyon. I mean, like you kind of see it and then you're like, all right, got it. You know, you can hike to the bottom. But that's, you know, you generally need a reservation to sleep at the bottom. You wouldn't want to go up and back in a day. So not many people actually are able to make that trip. So the average visitation to the Grand Canyon, it's like 3 or 4 hours. But on one hand, I get it. Whereas a park like a Glacier or something has a lot more, it rewards exploration. And so I would never say the Grand Canyon's overrated, I guess, but it's just there's more to be discovered in there's a variety of scenery in a place like Olympic that you're not going to find necessarily at or even Crater Lake, which is stunning. I mean, Crater Lake is the most beautiful lake I have ever seen. It is the bluest lake I've ever seen. But still, like, you see it and you're like, all right, got it. Whereas a park like the Everglades, I mean, you can wade through that. It's not as obviously impressive on a scenery level, but I think maybe there's more to do.
So you would describe the Grand Canyon as like a Playboy magazine. You open it, you've seen everything. Oh, it's there. But you would say maybe like Glacier National Park is like a Sears catalog, where it's like, oh, this is very, so I wonder what's here. Let's go to the next page. Maybe more is there. Wow, look, ties.
You can pleasure yourself with either.
Boom time! Boom time!
John Oliver had a great bit where they opened up the Yelp page for the Grand Canyon. And it, I just checked it, at the time when he did it, it had you know, like 5,000 five-star reviews or something, but it had 6 one-star reviews. And he's just like, who are the people who rated the Grand Canyon a one? And there were, you know, the responses were like, too hot. Like, too, it was a little big. Like, just,
yeah, there's people, a woman who does a whole art series on that where she draws the one-star reviews of national parks. So that's a whole bit that, like, and honestly, some of them are so outlandish that I wonder if they've been left as a joke.
Sure.
But I mean, you go to Congaree National Park in South Carolina, and if you go in July, you know, in the heat of mosquito season, I totally get why you might have a bad time there. It's or Death Valley in the middle of the summer. But yeah, that,
or Zion too. I mean, I've only seen your pieces on it. I've actually never been there, but I saw the CBS report you did on just the overcrowding there and just how crazy it's gotten in the summer. And that, to me, even pre-pandemic, looked like the last place on earth I would want to be, is, you know, shoulder to shoulder with thousands of other tourists hiking like through a watery trail with everyone pushing each other. That sounds awful to me.
Yeah, like, what, it's, take a place like Pinnacles, which is a less visited national park in California, and a day alone at Pinnacles is arguably better than a crowded day at Zion, in terms of the experience you're going to have. It depends on what you're there to do. But yeah, some of those, especially those Utah parks, Zion, Bryce, Arches. I mean, there was a time where they had to close the gates of Arches for like an hour and a half as there was just too many people coming through.
That reminds me in Game of Thrones when the Baratheons had to close the castle gates because the Red Keep was closed for the day.
Yeah, it's exactly like that. Yeah,
that's
yeah.
What happened. Yeah, season 5, episode 4. I remember this. Yeah, yeah. Thanks, Alex. You saw I was Connor, fading, so you brought me back.
Yeah, I was trying to get Flula back in the conversation. Yeah, yeah. Connor, you have not had a home for, I think, going on 5 years now.
It's not cute anymore. It's just weird.
But what's been the benefit of that? Because I often dream of just putting my family in a van and traveling the country back and forth. Would you recommend that? Would you say maybe for 6 months? Like, what would you say?
I've dreamed of putting your family in a van.
Oh, great. Thanks. We'd love to go with you.
Yeah. Cool. Sign me up.
It's the upsides about, basically, I was traveling so much that I realized that spending full-time rent in LA, which, as we all know, is a bunch of money, like, to then never see my place just didn't make sense. So instead, I took that money, and in the times that I wasn't on work's time, I would live on the road in between, cash in my Hilton points or get an Airbnb or whatever. And it was great, because I mean, the best case scenario of that is, like, we're doing a piece in Copenhagen on salty licorice, which I know is also a German obsession as well.
And like, it's also my safe word. Yes.
Yeah.
So, Connor, you know, I don't know if there are real rankings of the parks, but in your brain, is there, like, do you have, like, right now your top couples of parks? You can change your mind tomorrow, but right now, would you say, like, oh, these are my most favorites?
Yeah, I've got the ones that I'm most eager to get back to, because I feel like I gave them short shrift. So one of those is Wrangell St. Elias National Park. It is by far the largest of all the national parks. It's in Alaska. I think you could fit like 13 Glacier National Parks inside of Wrangell St. Elias. Sorry. No one will ever see it all. There's a lot more to like do there. So that's one I'm eager to get back to. Like I mentioned, I like Olympic a lot. And I mean, for me, it's the ones I visited as a kid for the first time. So the first time I was ever on an airplane, I was 14 or 15 years old, flew from Charleston, West Virginia out west, saw Zion, Bryce, the Grand Canyon all in the same trip. So I think partially for nostalgic reasons, those have remained some of my favorites. I mean, they're great parks, but also like it's been fun to revisit them. So I've probably been to those more than any of them. But I mean, there's not a bad one in the bunch. It's not one I would talk somebody out of visiting.
So Connor, you have done this trip. It feels like, I like what you've done. It's very German. Like you have, I need to see all of the things inside of the year, and then I will write a book about this now. Is there another kind of system plan, dream, organized adventure that you have in your brain that will happen?
Not yet. I've certainly thought about it, because I do like that whatever percent German I might be, like that does sort of speak to me, where it's like, it's concrete, there's a goal, there's a symmetry to that.
Oh, sign me out.
Yeah. And so I know I've thought about similar kinds of things, also just from like a marketing hook. It's nice, you know, people respond to that. People want more than you know. If I was the guy who'd gone to 75% of the parks, that's not a book, you know. All of a sudden 100% is.
That's a haiku. Yeah.
Exactly. My Acadia to Shenandoah journey through every national park. Yeah, yeah. No, there's nothing yet. I mean, I've probably inadvertently been to 40% of the Hampton Inns in the country, and probably 70% of the Arby's. But that's been an accidental quest, not a purpose one.
Well,
One
thing you have done that is just like this, Connor, is one time, I think it was maybe some years ago, you wrote a nice rap song about all of the top 100 restaurants in Los Angeles. Is this correct? It was an enjoyable tune.
And actually, I just happen to have it here right now. So let's listen to it.
What?
Boom. Oh, wow. That was great.
That's, as they say now, that's really slappies.
You know what's sad is how many of those restaurants, even pre-pandemic, had probably closed, because those were the 99 essential restaurants that Jonathan Gold, who has since passed away, at the time was a food critic for the LA Weekly, then went on to the LA Times. I believe he's the first food critic to win a Pulitzer. And I had been living in Los Feliz. Like, oh gosh, you know, Alcove is getting too much of my money. You know, Little Dom's is getting that. So I was like, well, what if I just change it up? And so then I think probably both of you went to those with me, because it became a fun thing with my pals to be like, all right, this is the list. Where are we going to next? And there was a mix of high end and low end. He was really good about finding spots that you might not otherwise discover in like Alhambra or San Gabriel or Bell, California. So it was kind of a way to see a lot of Southern California and eat well. And then, you know, I'd save a place like Cut, which is the Wolfgang Puck Steakhouse. That was like a birthday spot. And then the like Peruvian taco stand on Western was just a sort of everyday thing. Alex, we went to one. I just can't remember. Where did we go?
We went to a few, actually, but the one I remember most is we went to the original Guisado's Tacos, which I had never been to. And then Guisado's actually kind of become more of a chain almost around LA, and rightly so, because their tacos are amazing. But that was the first time I'd ever had tacos that were made like that. And yeah, so amazing. So I remember
more
that
like
really
a
well.
Stew kind of. Yeah, it was like a... because it was, I mean, that was the original and only then, right? Like that was, and I just went to one yesterday that was like in Pasadena, and that's probably the eighth or ninth one. Yeah. So it's sort of had like a sort of sugarfish kind of expansion, where it's like a mini chain.
Let me hippity hoppity. Connor, so you are from a place called West Virginia Mountain Mama Blue Ridge Parkway, Shenandoah River, or whatever.
That's what's on my license. Yeah.
So in this place, West Virginia, I think many people don't know many things about it. What is something that nobody knows about West Virginia that is either cool or strange?
What's crazy is the one thing everybody knows is that song. Like, when any world travels, people are singing "Country Roads Take Me Home," West
Choose
Virginia.
A place.
Exactly. In terms of everything else, the fact that it's a state, like I'm like weirdly international folks tend to get that. I don't know what it says about our education system, but like there's only 50 of them. And I can't tell you how many times I have been in a conversation with a fellow American about where I'm from. And I'll say West Virginia, and they'll be like, oh, so I have friends in Roanoke, or I have friends in, you know, Williamsburg. And I'm like, yeah, that's a different state. And it's I think it's because there's not an East Virginia. There's a North and South Dakota, the North and South Carolina. Somehow it confuses people, but I don't know. You can say New Mexico and people don't like, they know you don't mean.
I have friends in Mexico City.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So somehow we just didn't quite catch on, but I think it's a beautiful place. That new national park that's there, New River Gorge National Park, just designated a couple of weeks ago. I think that will probably expose more people to the nature of it, but yeah, it's a wonderful spot. I'm glad to be from there. My family's all still back there. To graduate fourth grade, I had to sing all 55 counties. I think West Virginia just has a lot of state pride, maybe because of getting sort of crapped on by other states. Like we somehow like develop like a pride. I know pretty much every, like if you move to a new state, you meet the West Virginians who have moved there. And there's a sense of community there where maybe versus like growing up in California, where you might not have as much of like a sense of California pride. West Virginia does have it.
Oh yeah, I know Peter Farrelly. He and his brother, they are from Rhode Island, and they are like two of the top 10 most famous of all the Rhode Islanders, you know, currently alive. You know, I know this is a tiny state, but Rhode Island, but like West Virginia. I know you, and then I know Jennifer Garner is from West Virginia, but that is all I know. This and you have a Golden Dome, that's all.
Yeah, yeah. How do you know about the Golden Dome? I'm surprised.
I've driven by it during a trip that I was going on the East Coast. It was not yours. It was like me trying to visit 5 Shoney's in a day or something.
Well, Shoney's for all right. Well, that's a fun fact. Shoney's is, I think his name is Charles Schoenbaum from Charleston, West Virginia. The first Shoney's is in
what?
West Virginia.
Oh, I love it.
We actually in our family, anytime we have upset stomach, we call it Shoney stomach. And this is no matter where we eat. But like, if someone's like, yeah, oh, I can't.
Ringing endorsement.
I know it's so bad, but like, Shoney's. We ate at Shoney's every week of my childhood, because Wednesday is kids eat free at Shoney's, and the Knightons maximized that. And even when I turned 13 and got off the kids menu, I made such a stink. I was such a bratty kid of like making sure the waitress knew that I was 13, because I, you know, I'd come around, well, as a teenager, I have to order off the adult menu. And then I'd order the same chicken fingers that were off the kids menu. I'd just make my parents pay $6 more for them. That was annoying. But I ate at Shoney's the night my sister was born. My brother and I were there with my aunt and uncle. And somehow I was just so nervous about having a little sister that my reaction to that was to put ranch dressing on everything. Oh. Like almost as like a fear factor kind of thing, where it's like, do you think I can eat this cantaloupe dipped in ranch dressing? And did that little show and tell for my aunt and uncle. So a lot of Shoney's in my life. I'm glad that you've been to one.
Oh, yeah. No, I've been to many. It was Shoney's and Denny's, but Shoney's was just more southern to me. Let me say, so you did not workshop the name Shoney's stomach? It doesn't really roll like Shoney Tam Tam or like Shoney Owie. I don't know. Something.
No, you're right. I don't know why that. And it could just as easily have been Ponderosa's stomach. I mean, there's a lot of places where like a couple hours later, you're like, oh, that hit the wrong way.
Yeah, I'm still searching for brand deals from American restaurants. So that's why I have never mentioned my Golden Corral stomach.
Right. Yeah, I think I probably just shut down my Shoney's.
Your Shoney's.
Do you love pooping real quickly?
In Charleston, there's a signed 8x10 of Connor that they're currently taking down from the wall at the Shoney's. And they're like, okay. It's right next to the Jennifer Garner one. And they're like, oh, take that Connor Knight one down.
Yeah.
Other famous West Virginians would be Gilligan from Gilligan's Island. As a West Virginian. Don Knotts, Barney Fife from the Andy Griffith Show. But the fact that I have to like go to that sort of tells you where we're
what's
we're
happening.
A black and white show that's been off the air for like 4 decades. There's some other folks.
The famous Idaho game is a tricky one as well.
Yeah, exactly. Who's sort of the like? Wait, oh, is man. Aaron? Mm. Aaron Paul is Idaho, right?
Aaron Paul. Yeah, that's a good one. You know, there's like you can go to sports figures. Like there's some you know, Jake Plummer, NFL quarterback, these kind of guys. But
Jake the Snake.
Mm-hmm. Harmon Killebrew. Walter Johnson, famous old baseball players. Yeah.
Entertainment, though? Anybody
tricky.
Else?
Yeah.
Oh, also, ringily dingly, singing diggity, Bob Dylan, but younger, Bob Dylan, what's his name? Jack Reacher, something like this.
Jack Reacher, yeah. I think you're talking about my friend Josh Ritter.
Josh Ritter, yes. Sorry.
Sort of well known singer songwriter. Yeah.
Oops.
Jack Reacher. Sorry, Josh.
Connor, if you had one tip to give to the peoples about the parks, and you don't have to have one tip, you can have zero tips and tell me to suck it. What would it be?
I mean, that's very tempting, but I'll give you an actual tip. I would say don't be so concerned about peak season. You know, go when you can. Go when you can spend the longest time there is valuable advice. And also, for a place like Zion and Bryce, I would hate for somebody to write them off because they've seen those pictures of the crowd. So if you get there even just at, you know, an hour earlier, 2 hours earlier, it makes a vast difference. And you're there. You're not there to like party in Springdale, Utah at night. You're there to see the park. So go to bed early, wake up early. And then the further, you know, you spend even a mile off the trail, 80% of that crowd dips away. There are so many people who are there for the overlooks or there to just take the picture. So if you venture a little further, wake up a little earlier. You'll have a good time. So.
Connor, before you leave, every guest of Boom Time is required to do something we do every episode, which is to answer a series of hard-hitting, very serious, very important, very fast questions with using the, you know, only your, you can only use your lizard brain. So you can, you must answer quickly without thinking. The first thing that comes to your mind, and Flula will ask you those questions right now.
Connor Knighton, what is your most favorite TV series that you have binged in 2002 lately?
Schitt's Creek.
Oh, okay, we'll beep that. What is your favorite American food chain fast?
Tudor's Biscuit World.
Who's the who to what?
Tudor's Biscuit World, found only in my native West Virginia and maybe a tiny little bit of Kentucky. It is as delicious as it sounds.
It's a what whole world of biscuits?
It's a whole world of biscuits. Yeah, and with like very pedestrian names. It's like Ron and the...
Ron?
Yeah, the Ron, the Dottie. They're just named after random biscuit fans Ron. Who like went in there and ordered a biscuit. The Ron is like a sausage, egg, and cheese biscuit. Oh, there's they have one called the Politician, which is full of bologna. to the menu. But yeah, Tudor's Biscuit World is like, I have such a love of regional chains because they're sort of simultaneously like accessible and exclusive. You go to Austin, Texas, and there must be better queso than what they serve at Torchy's, but there's like 20 Torchy's and it's easy to get.
Great breakfast tacos. Special.
Great breakfast taco. Taco Deli, I think, has even better breakfast tacos, and that's in Austin. Mm-hmm. So I try and always sort of pop into those spots. Culver's in Wisconsin, Taco Time in the Pacific Northwest.
Yes,
lots of spots like that. But yeah, Tudor's Biscuit World, hometown favorite, and also I think legitimately the best. It's a biscuit that would cost $12 in Silver Lake. That's probably $3.50 in West Virginia.
Oh, perfect. Tell me, the Politician biscuit, is it cooked on both sides because of flip-flopping?
Oh.
Do you get it?
Seems like they should design a Tudor's menu. Oh. I don't, it may not be.
Okay, what desert do you like to eat for dessert?
Do you say what desert do I like to eat for
I
dessert?
I cannot repeat the question. You must answer the question. This is the rules, Connor.
The Mojave? I don't know. Okay. I'll stick with the Mojave.
Is that a biscuit at Tudor's Biscuit Town?
No, it's a desert. You said what desert do I like to eat for dessert?
But we don't have time. Moving on. Connor, your letters spell the word croon. So I ask you this question. What songs, playlist, or albums did you croon to yourself as you drove through all of the national parks?
Ooh, a lot of Sirius XM 90s on 9. For some of the year, I was with my cameraman, and it was the one station we could agree on because it was... although weirdly, they have a whole decade to choose from, and it's like the same 100 songs. Like, you hear Big Pimpin' a lot, and a lot of Sugar Ray, that kind of stuff. So.
Oh, Sugar Ray, yeah. Sugar Ray and...
Hypnotize is what I meant. Hypnotize is on there a lot.
Hypnotize from Notorious B.I.G.?
Exactly, yeah.
Nice. As I love this, as you're driving by Sequoia. So what is the best meal you've ever eaten inside of a national park?
Ooh, there is a pulled pork sandwich at Petrified Forest National Park that is better than it has any right to be. It's just in a random cafeteria, but it was delicious. I don't know if I was extra hungry. There's also a dining room at Mesa Verde that's really good.
Shout out Petrified. Okay, if you had to eat one national park, which one would it be and why, please?
Ooh, Great Smoky Mountains kind of sounds like a dish. Smoky.
Sounds like a biscuit.
Yeah,
right? Biscuit World.
Yeah, I'd eat that.
If you are a Game of Thrones, if you was a Game of Thrones character, Connor Knighton, who would you be? Please tell me and why. Stop thinking. Just say it. Scream it out.
No, but I want to. You're such a fan. I want to give you a deeper cut than just like I want to be Jon Snow because he's nice. I'll be. Who's the guy? I just saw him in The Queen's Gambit. Who like chills?
Yes. He's like, I'm very sad. My sister must help me. Oh, I'm being stabbed by the skeletons. Bye-bye. This was my plan the whole time. Time to run around mazes. Okay, we have spoken many minutes. Connor Knighton, thank you very much. Everyone, please purchase your book via the places. And we are excited to see you more on CBS Morning Sunday, which not to be confused with the Al Pacino film about footballs.
Any Given Sunday? Is that where we're going? It is on Any Given Sunday.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Oh,
pick a Sunday. It's on.
I correct my standing. Okay. Well, everyone, check it out. Connor Knighton, thank you very much. Alex Simmons, this has been Boom Time. Ticky Talky Boom Boom. Everyone, hello.
Boom, 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 boom.
Boom Time!